But first, a word from our sponsor. Zero Height's annual How We Document report is here. We surveyed over 500 design system professionals about their design systems, team makeup, documentation, and tooling to pull together a comprehensive state of the design system industry. Did you know that 72% of companies have a dedicated design systems team, but only 30% of those teams are using versioning on their design system documentation? Dive into these stats and way more by downloading the report at zerohight.com/how-we-document. Back to the podcast. On today's show, we're going to be talking about global design systems. Should we be actively working to standardize the way we do components, or is a global design system a global size no-no? I'm Luke Murphy, and I'm joined by my co-host, Michelle Chin. We're both design advocates at Zero Height, the design system management platform, and this is Design Systems WTF. So the global design system, do you want to give us a little bit of a background as to why this is sort of coming up at the moment?
Yeah, Michelle? So I think, you know, Brad was feeling introspective and looking back at 10 years of atomic design. So atomic design turned 10 last year. And I think part of it was, we're all making buttons. We're all making the same components. Like, how many times can you design a button, right? Like, you know, it should have a label or an icon. Like, there's, how much can you really do? And so part of it was like, rather, basically we're all making like sets of the same thing. They all look a little different, but we're basically just making, you know, 150 components over and over again. All these different companies were kind of working in silos. So like, what would it look like if we worked together to contribute to a global system where you're only having to really essentially like build a, you know, button once or take a code snippet of a button, but then can apply some sort of theming or styling on top of it that makes it your own. So like your own brand colors, typography, that type of stuff. Rather than do all like the legwork to make your own, code it and everything. I don't know if there's anything else you wanted to add to that, but that's the rough gist of it.
Yes, we will share a link to a really great article that Brad put together on Big Medium that goes through the whole concept. I think that, so like one of the overarching things, and I think I'm pretty sure they talk about it in the article as well, but he definitely talked about it in the talk, is basically what he's suggesting is like a standardized, like a standard for components. And it is very much at a component level, as far as I can tell. But he's talking about like building up something like a W3C group or a community group to figure out a good standard set of components that can act as a base. I like the concept in theory. How about you?
I like it too, like especially as like someone who's who was a design manager, and I think in terms of a growth progression, like I don't want like my most senior designers tinkering with like stroke of a like outlines of things and finessing buttons. Like I think like that can't, like I want them to elevate themselves to do something else, right? So like if they have like the Lego blocks already, right? Like from this global design system, they can do things that require critical thinking, right? Like patterns and stuff. Like, I think 2024 is like the year that I'm pushing patterns as my own agenda.
I think that's kind of where I sit as well. I feel like that it kind of makes sense that at a component level, because like Brad's right, like we are generally creating the same shit at a basic level. You know, there's not much difference between buttons across the internet. There's not much difference between date pickers, and it's not much difference between inputs. And I think the thing that the area that I kind of get a little bit caught up on is this the biggest problem we should be focusing on right now? Because I think that one of the things is that a lot of these things are spec'd at a HTML level anyway, right? So things like you know, buttons, inputs, they're all spec'd and they're all styled to a degree. Do those styles maybe need updating at a W3C, like at a specification level, or like at a default level, potentially? Do they possibly, do we need some more to build that out into some more like base level components that need to be included there? I mean, we haven't had an update to the HTML spec since HTML5, which was 2010.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
And also, like, the fact that we do... So I put this out on Twitter to get opinions, and of course, Scott Riley, who is an amazing author, wrote a great book called Mindful Design, but is also possibly one of the mouthiest people I follow, came back with, like, a 6-tweet thesis. But Scott does, like, quite rightly point out that we already have, like, headless UI as a concept, which is basically what this is talking about. You're talking about, like, building it at a really base component level so the structure is the same across. And we have that. It's just not, like, standardized at the moment.
Yeah.
Yeah?
We do. Yeah.
I don't know. It's just basically, like, I wonder whether actually should we be focusing on building out sets of patterns that are... accessible and inclusive and like act as a set of guidelines for people to use at like a not a global, obviously you can't, when you're talking about patterns, you can't really do anything at like a global level because it is so
I want. So like in the talk that I did last year, I wanted a global pattern library, right, to consider you know, different cultures and how they might consume information or interact with stuff. So I think it is possible. Like, I don't think it's like global in the sense of that you have one standard of an empty space, right? But like you might have different variations of empty spaces depending on who your audience is, right? So, and there's a lot more flexibility. There's not really like standards like W3C standards, maybe. But
well, this is the thing is that I think that like, if we're focusing this on like a low technical level, I feel like it's a little bit of a missed opportunity. I should point out that I think that there are some definite wins here. I think there's some definite wins in that, you know, we could be building something that is at its core accessible. We could be building things that at their core are like intuitive and usable. That you know, have the ability to be internationalized easily. Like there are some advantages to doing this. It does feel a little bit like we're just building Bootstrap again.
Yeah, I mean, I think it to a certain extent it is, right? But Bootstrap is, I think, some companies, especially ones that, you know, need to be very secure and stuff, aren't going to allow you to use any third party anything, right? So can't use Bootstrap, can't use Tailwind, can't use MUI, like you can't do any of that. But if it was like a standard, right, like maybe that's something that we can use, right? So that's, yeah. I think that's like kind of like where the win is.
Yeah, okay, yeah, I suppose it's potentially not a bad idea. I think the other problem, of course, with standardizing anything is the fact that, what was it? It was like, I'm trying to remember when HTML4 was proposed. I think it was like 1999, the 4.01 specification was published, and then HTML5 was 2012. So we're talking a 13-year gap between two standards. Even design tokens, like the W3C community group was spun up, what, 2019?
Yeah, I think so. Something like that, yeah.
Sometime around then. Yeah. Oh, 8 years ago. There we go. Thanks, Kevin. and we're at first draft. And like that first draft only came out like a year and a half ago. And we haven't really made much progress beyond first draft at the moment. So this is, I think, one of the other problems is that the standards, like, I don't know whether this is a reason to not do it, but like standards are slow.
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot that goes into like coming up with a standard and they're kind of permanent-ish, right? So you can't rush these things, I guess. But I feel like, I don't know, maybe for perspective, I don't know how long other standards took to put in place. Maybe that's a short turnaround time, right? Who knows? But yeah, I think in tech, yeah, it's like, yeah, I don't know. Those are like eons and we move much faster. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. I think that's the thing. It's like proprietary tech has a chance to move a lot faster, which is why, you know, we've had, you know, like five different dominant frameworks used by people in the same space of time that one HTML spec was written. Anyway, convince me otherwise. Go on. Get on your soapbox now, because I feel like I've just been talking forever.
Yeah, I mean, I think the other thing is like, it's just, I'm really curious about the life cycle of adoption of like technology and software, right? Like, because even though tokens have been around for a while, like a lot of teams are still super new to tokens. And when are we going to all be comfortable with tokens? Because I think, like, thinking of atomic design, it's been around for 10 years. And I think a majority of the design world understands components. But like, at what point did that, what was the tipping point where like that was the majority, right? Because I think, you know, every once in a while I'll run into customers who are still, I don't know, using not Figma, right? and I think that's the thing, is like, there are some people that are early adopters, some people that are trendsetters that are going to move like quickly and further away, like, or more advanced than some of these standards, I guess, by the time standards actually come to be a thing. But it might be good timing for the majority of people who aren't adopting right away, right? So I think, yeah, that's the other thing, is like, I do, like, I understand, like, this is a very big effort, right? So it's like, someone would have to turn this into their life's work, right? I didn't see Brad volunteering to lead this, but in the article, he mentions several ways to like how this could get started. But I think the momentum is just, it's going to be hard to sustain. Like, you need to know that if we're investing in this, like, you have to be invested and know that's going to take a long time. But I think overall, in the greater good, like, it's going to be super helpful for people who aren't like the early adopters and jumping onto tech right away, or understanding all the things, like, when it comes to accessibility and stuff, right? If they had this like global design system, they can at least have some of those things built in, without having the expertise. So
I do think there was one other point that Scott brought up, which, I mean, I do have thoughts of my own as well. It's just that Scott's were very good, which is why I'm sharing them. But I know that this has been echoed by other people. I know Amy was talking about this as well. Amy Hoop, but because there's no other Amy that I talk about. That's why I don't feel like I need to say the last name anymore. That there is a problem with something, with an initiative like this, especially if an initiative like this that was created in like an open source world, the likelihood is that the contributions towards the global design system would likely be from people who have the privilege and the comfort and the power to be able to contribute. And I think that, you know, you can look at the, again, not to call them out, because I think what they're doing is great, but you can look at like the tokens community group is a really great example of this, where, yeah, I mean, sure, they're, you know, currently chaired by a relatively diverse selection of people, but when you look at the entire community group, it is overwhelmingly straight white and male. And it is just something where it's like, you don't want to be reinforcing those systemic biases that already happen. And I think that there is a, like, there's a chance, in Scott's words, it's got the potential to, what was it? It was basically potential to make something that is already horrendously and antithetically niche and cliquey more niche and cliquey. And I think that is a real problem as well.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a problem everywhere in design systems. So,
well, yeah,
not to say that excuses it. Yeah,
yeah, because I mean, you had this in the Howie document results, right? Where it's still depressingly undiverse.
Yeah, and like, you know, we should change that. It's not going to be easy to change that, but we should change it. So basically, out of the report, 69% of people identified as like white, Caucasian, or European descendants. So, meanwhile, the world's population is 83% not Western. So yeah, it's very, very oppositely proportionate. And yeah, I just, you know, I think maybe this could be a good starting point where we, you know, people who do build the global design system really take into account like what it's, you know, like all perspectives, right? Like not just what is commonly done, but like kind of set that standard. And maybe that does take a little longer, but we already know it's going to take longer. So I think it could be a good step forward.
That's the thing is, I think it can too. I think that there are just definitely some things that need to be kept in mind. And I wouldn't mind people, if we're doing this, I wouldn't mind some kind of like group of smart people who have done this before and know a lot about it to be working on some kind of publicly accessible set of patterns at the same time as, you know, sets of components. It's probably time to switch over to the questions from the audience. And there are a couple. So if you've got any more, please throw them in the chat. I thought there was an interesting one around the fact that, do we think this concept will expand to include mobile platforms like iOS or Android, or do we think that this is solved by Apple's human interface guidelines and Google's material design guidelines? Do you have thoughts about this?
I think that's interesting, right? Because I think, you know, this would be agnostic of any company and proprietary software, where like, you know, Apple's HIG and materials very much it's related to the way they have their systems, like their operating systems set up. So I don't know. I feel like it's like a little, it's an interesting middle ground, because they're, you know, I know people, what they have to design for both web apps and mobile apps, like they have to kind of decide, okay, are we going to go with what's natively in the mobile app? So like native toggles and checkboxes and stuff. Or are we going to style it to the way our web app looks, right? Like it's a common decision design system teams have to make.
I think it's interesting, because I think that there's still a massive problem. I think it's one of the big sort of problems to design systems getting to that like mass adoption, mainstream adoption, is that the way that design systems interact with the mobile platforms is still a bit broken. Like, and part of that is because it is still so tied into the proprietary. It's interesting, like what you were just talking about, it's not only like company and design decision, it's the fact that, you know, these platforms are still majority controlled by and funneled through their own app stores, and how well you do in those app stores is decided by those platforms. So it's actually the case, unless you're in like the top 0.1% of apps, you will be punished if you don't follow the human interface guidelines and the material design guidelines to the point of like animation and motion and like button styles and all those kind of things. If they don't feel like they're native to the platform, you'll actually get pulled back. And then, you know, I think the thing is again, like the global design system stuff feels very much like it's coming from a web first sort of position, which, having been on both sides, I've worked in the web since like 2000, well, I've worked in the web since bloody 1999, but professionally since I've been out of uni, I've been working in the web for almost 20 years now. And so started in the website and then went to mobile side for a few years. And I do have to say that I feel like life would be so much easier if we could just decide on a single system to base things off. Because at the moment it's all messed up. And I think it's I don't know, like I'd love it if we could just get to a single way of doing things, but I think that's probably way too like reductionist, and it's just my ideas as a designer as opposed to anything else.
It's, yeah, I mean, I think there's a lot. It's like decision fatigue, right? If we didn't have to think too hard about things, like that would be so much easier because we are having to make a lot of decisions.
If we didn't have to think about those things, we could maybe spend some time focusing on, you know, the core problems, right?
Or patterns, right?
Yeah, or patterns, right?
Tomas has a question. So how would we adapt a global design system into a language that links like Russian or height, such as Myanmar? So thinking about like internationalization, localization, and how we would do that. And so I think the concept is that there is flexibility within those standards of, you know, here's where you would tweak the height, like, and maybe there was like a recommendation based on the different languages used. So
yeah, I think because the concept behind this is we are talking about headless UI. We are talking about the concept of like it's the base like semantic structure of something as opposed to any of the styling that's on top of it. Is that's like, correct me if I'm wrong, that is the concept, right?
Yeah. It's like, because like the otherwise, like we have material design already, right? Like, but that's heavily styled. Yeah. So this would be like your bare bones, like skeletal structure that you could apply things to it, right? Like in terms of like your branding colors and that type of thing, but like also situations to it. So like localization. Yeah.
I do think that this is something that the internet is terrible for as well. And, you know, the industry is terrible for as well, is that we do have a very Western centric view of the world. And so I do think that if this was a thing that we were trying to build as a standard around the world, one of the key requirements is having representation from different parts of the world that have different like sets of requirements, because it's not just even just in like language and the way that like text is used, but also in terms of like interactions as well, expected interactions. And it's where, like, as soon as you get into the styling of stuff, it becomes really tough, because it's not, our interaction patterns are different depending on culture. In fact, Michelle did an amazing talk about this that's on the Zero Height website. If you go and look for the Converge videos from UK last year, there's a really great talk around designing. It was design systems and colonialization, wasn't it?
Decolonizing.
That's the one. But yeah, but I definitely found this when the first time I've worked for a company that actually did do like localized design, I realized how much I didn't know when it came to other cultures. So yeah. There was, I thought, an interesting comment that wasn't really a question, and I thought it might make sense to use the last 3 minutes to talk about the concept of standardization. And the fact that there was a comment from Kevin about how it's hard to call the W3C design tokens a standard of value. And I think this is part of my issue with it. It's the fact that the standards process is very long. The tokens standard that is being worked on at the moment is of absolutely no use to any consumers at the moment. There's just no reason why consumers should... Well, maybe not no reason. There's little reason for standards to worry about it. However, it's of massive use to vendors. So folks like, well, I mean, folks like us, but also folks like Figma, folks like, and this is a problem that we've had in the past and with the internet, is the fact that vendors don't talk to each other and vendors don't talk to standards committees. And you end up with like the browser wars of 1999. And you remember the optimized, this site works best for IE6?
Yes. Oh my gosh.
And yeah, I think that this is one of those things where, while I think standardization is a really great thing, I do think standardization is a long, long process, because you're working with vendors and vendors have to prioritize, supporting your standards. And so even if somebody created this amazing standard set that would work even on the web, you'd have to get, you know, Arc, Google, Microsoft, who else does browsers these days? Firefox, although I think that's also Chromium. But yeah, whoever creates the browsers, you have to get them to actually prioritize supporting it in the browser. And that can take years and years and years.
That's an interesting perspective that I didn't think of. I think also, like, it's like, I wonder how much time people that, you know, are working on the standard are putting into it, right? Like, if they're all volunteers, like, I mean, they're probably all, you know, they're doing design and coding, like, for their job, and, like, they probably don't want to do extra, or they might have to do other things, right? So, or they have lives outside of work, right? So, it could even be, like, I would love if, like, companies sponsored people, like, hey, use like, 10% of your time, right, to work on this. I think that's very generous, but, yeah.
Some companies actually do. So, I know the folks at Microsoft do. I'm pretty sure there are folks at Google who do. And that's a good, like, a good... good and bad thing is the fact that, so again, like on the tokens, if you look at the tokens standards group, like most of the active members are people who work for vendors. So it does mean that they've got a vested interest in the way that it is written, but it also means that they are also motivated to actually do something because they're in a position to actually affect change. That's all the time we have for today, unfortunately. If you have any questions and you want to fire them across to us, then please, please do so in Slack. You can also suggest topics for upcoming episodes as well. So you can join the Zero Slack community by going to zerohype.com/slack. You can also get in touch with us on Twitter or X, whatever they're calling it these days, at ZeroHype. And you can email us as well. community@zerohype.com. Until then, see you next time.
Thanks, everyone.